I thought I would begin with, I actually have some visuals today to show you. So I was going to begin with, showing you my family. This was taken this July at my niece's wedding. And so, for those of you that don't know Peter and think he might be a short guy, a short fat guy, he's not. You've only heard his voice on the radio. It's him at the top. And then my oldest daughter, Sarah, is next to me holding her son, Charlie, who just turned a year old. My next son, Michael, is the tall one at the top, holding his four-year-old, Audrey. His wife underneath him, Lauren, with their two-year-old, Michael. My next son, Joshua, who's a second lieutenant in the Army, is here on the right. And then this is Mike and Lauren's little guy, Jack, who I'm holding. And then my youngest daughter, Rachel, is on the end here. Just graduated from college, and then Sarah's husband, Rick, is above her there. So that is the most recent picture of the whole Herbeck clan together. And then just to show you my grandkids, I don't have that many yet, so I can do this, okay? Audrey and Mikey, and then Charlie and Jack, so... So I suppose this is like the send-off talk because we each need something to grab hold of and to go home with and to begin to live or continue to live in our lives. So we're put on earth for one reason and one reason alone, and that's to learn to love as God loves. It's the most fundamental thing that we will do. Yes, it's the most difficult thing. And the most important thing you've done today or yesterday or will do in the future is just to love someone. And this isn't just sentimentality or romanticism. It's actually God's perspective on what's most important. Paul says in Romans 13:8, owe nothing to anyone except the debt of love. We've been given the gift of merciful love, and in response to that mercy, we're called to love. There's an unspoken rule, I think, in the world today, which is, I love you, so love me back. But with God, the rule is, God says, I love you, so love one another. It's really different than the world's perspective. But the type of love that God is calling us to trumps everything. Listen to this familiar passage. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. That means you're annoying. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I'm nothing. And if I give away all that I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, if I become a martyr, but have not love, I'm nothing. St. John of the Cross said, at the end of our lives, we will be judged by our love. Not our bank account, not our wardrobe, not our degrees, not our children, by love. So anyone who knows me well knows that I'm a big Mother Teresa fan. Where's my... Oh, she left. Did she go? Okay. My Mother Teresa buddy. Okay. But I didn't always know about her, and I didn't always love her. But I want to tell you a story that really has changed my life and helped me understand what authentic love truly is and what we're called to do. About 26 years ago, I was the young mother of a 2-year-old and a 5-month-old, Sarah and Michael. And I was really struggling with my vocation as a young mother. I had been involved for years before that in campus ministry, and Peter and I met doing campus ministry, and even when we began to be married, it was just like a little bit like life as usual. I was pregnant, I was sick, but you know, we had young people in our home 5 days a week, and it was just, you know, it was ministry from the outset. And as I began to have young children, some of that had to take a back seat, rightfully so. But I was really struggling with kind of the daily, I don't know how to say it, the daily challenges and grind of being a young mother. All the things you had to do that got undone in about 5 seconds. Right? And the kind of hiddenness that there was to that life, the thanklessness that there was to that life. And I think the biggest challenge of all was feeling like, is what I'm doing really making a difference? And I remember talking to different people, and they would say, so what's your job? And I'd say, well, I'm at home with my kids. And they'd say, no, but what's your job? And I'd say, well, that is my job. And so even in the world, not feeling a sense of what I was doing as a mother was entirely valued. And I remember thinking, okay, I drive my kids around. I mean, they were little, but we drive around, and I'm going to be driving them around for a long time. I could hire somebody to do that. Now, I really couldn't because we didn't have any money. But or I'm cooking. Well, I could hire somebody to cook. Or cleaning. Somebody could clean for me, and somebody could do all these things better than me. And so I'm sharing this to say I was really struggling with just finding the value in it and knowing that God was really favoring what I was doing. Well, during this time, Peter and I were invited to go to Germany to speak in a conference on the family. And they said, oh, we have a lot of speakers, and we'd like each of you to give a short presentation. It was very organized. It was going to be to some of the aristocracy in Germany. And they said, so we'd like you each to give a presentation. So I was pretty excited, arranged to have my parents watch Sarah, and I was going to take Michael with me because he was 5 months old and still nursing. And so we got ready to go, and I brought a lot of really nice clothes because it was the aristocracy, after all. And Michael was just starting to eat baby food, and I was pretty excited. Well, we packed up to go, and from the get-go, this trip was just really challenging. Michael was awake the whole way over and cried on the plane. I just had these memories of Peter pacing back and forth with him. We got there, and our luggage didn't make it onto the train that we had to get onto. So we arrived with 2 diapers, 1 jar of baby food. I mean, just kind of the essentials that we were carrying. Our luggage finally arrived, and it had been broken into, and all of my jewelry had been stolen. All the baby food that I brought, and ladies, remember back when it was in glass jars, had broken on my cashmere sweaters. And it was just like kind of went from bad to worse. I had a horrible migraine. Michael was sleeping like a baby during the day and being awake at night. And to top it all off, one of the conference organizers came to us on the first day and said, there's been a change in the schedule, and we only need one of you to speak, and we'd like Peter to do it. And I said to the Lord, why? Why did you bring me all the way here? This trip has been like the trip from hell. And why. I could have supported him from a distance at home and prayed for him. So anyway, Peter spoke. He did a great job. I mean, Germans are very, and they actually stood up and gave him a standing ovation. He just really preached. I was very proud of him. The conference was winding up. It was a two-day conference, and we were getting ready to go to hear the last speaker, the keynote speaker, which was in a huge conference hall. And again, one of the people that was assisting us, that they assigned to help us, came over and said, we'd like to show you to your seats. We're giving some of the speakers the best seats in the balcony so you can have a really good view of the speaker. So we began to walk toward our seats, and we had Michael with us. And another one of the conference workers came over to me and tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, excuse me, can you come with me? Well, one of the things I want to tell you before I go on with the story is that the keynote speaker that day was Mother Teresa. So this woman says to me, Mother Teresa would like all the women with their babies to sit on the stage with her. So I start walking away, and Peter's like, where are you going? And I'm like, I'm going to sit with Mother Teresa. And he was like, oh, can I come too? And I'm like, no. Unless you're nursing this baby, you're not coming. So they took me backstage, and I went and sat on the stage with probably about 30 other moms, and Mother Teresa was like from here to where Judy is sitting for me. And I remember just every detail so intimately. She was wearing this gray cardigan sweater that was just, the cuffs around it were all tattered. She had her rosary with her. And when she walked in from the back of the auditorium toward us, she was surrounded by her sisters. She was so tiny and so hunched over that you could barely see her until she got on the stage. And she spoke about the value of life. And I remember I first heard it from her lips when she said, the first one that greeted Jesus was John in the womb, and talked about the value of human life. Well, I want to tell you, with all those small children on the stage with Mother Teresa, you could have heard a pin drop. Nobody cried. Nobody fussed. It was just this silence as she spoke. And afterwards, I just thought, wow, this was amazing. I can't believe I got to sit on the stage with her. So I walked off the stage, and we were backstage, and that same young woman tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, don't go. Mother Teresa wants to meet all the moms who sat on the stage with her. So I got in line, and I'll tell you, this happened so fast. I couldn't believe it. I was just standing in line, and all of a sudden, I'm just there, and she's here, and she's standing right in front of me. And I have to, you know, I'm holding Michael, and I have to kind of get down, and I remember she grabbed my hand, and first of all, she gave Michael a blessing, and then she pressed a medal into my hand for him. And then she grabbed my hand, and she pulled me really close, and she looked in my eyes, and she did this with that little crooked finger of hers. And she said to me, never forget that your job as a mother is the most important job of all. And in that moment, it was like I knew why God brought me to Germany. That he needed to speak a word into my heart that I couldn't hear in my kitchen, or in my laundry room, or in the grocery store. That what I was doing right then in living my vocation as a mother was the most important thing I could do, even if no one saw the sacrifice or understood what it took to be faithful to that. Because that was what God was calling me to do then. That's how he was calling me to love. And obviously it's, you know, amazing that I met Mother Teresa, who's now a saint. But the Lord used her to speak a word into my heart that has, every day I wake up and I think about that, because it was so formative for me. Not only is my vocation as a mother, but in learning what it means to really love. And I want to tell you, my son Michael, who was 5 months old at the time, you saw a picture of him, is now a grown man, a wonderful father to three children, a very committed Catholic man who's very serious about his faith and has a genuine heart to really love. So I feel like her blessing on his life really has borne tremendous fruit as well. So I want to just talk about, for us, what it means to love. And we're going to use Mother Teresa as our inspiration here. Very simple. Okay. Learning to love means saying yes to Jesus day in and day out. It's a radical trust and obedience in God and His will and His plan. Saying yes to what Jesus has called me to, even when I don't think I'm doing a good job. Even when others might not value what I'm doing. Even when I can't see the bigger picture or understand its implications. I've been so inspired as I, you know, once I met Mother Teresa, I dove into her life and learning more about what she was all about. And just her receiving that call within the call. How many of you are familiar with her story? Okay, if you're not, I really encourage you to learn more about her. And what it took to her for her to really respond to that call within the call, to really leave something she thought was firm and secure, even within her own vocation, and to go out into Calcutta and to serve. The way we grow in this radical trust and obedience is shown right here in this picture. What is she doing, ladies? Praying. She's on her knees, and what you can't see is, I'm sure, the Blessed Sacrament is there. This is the foundation and the core of who this woman was and what allowed her to live this call of love with radical trust and obedience was prayer. One of the saints said, I don't know who it was, he said, do not be so busy with the things of God that you don't have time for prayer. It's easy to do that, isn't it? Oh, my life is a prayer. Okay. Good for you, but get down on your knees and pray. Spend time with Jesus. The world out there is way too distracting to make your life your prayer time. It doesn't work. Okay. It's good your life is living sacrificially for the Lord, but we need time away, quiet time. And I really try the best I can to to get myself to the chapel where it's quiet, because even at home, there are so many distractions. So prayer is foundational to learning how to love in this way. I don't know if it was Ralph Martin who once said this to me or if he heard it from somebody, but he told me 99% of the Christian life is just showing up. So I think there's an element to prayer and to doing this, which is just faithfulness. Sow the habit. Just begin to do it. And thank God for seasons in the church when we get to start over, right? Okay, so my next point. Learning to love means learning to do small things with great love. Very famous saying now by Mother Teresa. Not all of us can do great things, but we can all do small things with great love. I found that as a woman, there's just naturally a hidden quality to my life that's looked different in different seasons of my life. How many of you are young moms? Raise your hands. Talk to some of you out there. Okay. So you know that quality of your life right now. That's a lot of the doing to be undone. And a lot of the things that don't get appreciated. It's loving in the daily, mundane, repetitive tasks. It's cleaning the mess, making the beds, doing the dishes, the diapers, the laundry. A number of years ago, I was in the middle of all that, four kids. We tried to have chore day at our house on Saturdays, which went a little bit like this. All right, kids, here's your chores. Then everyone kind of goes off to do their chores, and I'm doing my chores, and then I come back, and everyone's doing something else, right? But one of the things that Saturdays was cleaning bathrooms, and so I remember one Saturday I was in my bathroom, which everybody seemed to use, even though there were other bathrooms in the house, and I was cleaning the toilet, and with boys in the house, it was not one of my favorite jobs to do. And I was admittedly grumbling a bit. I was like, oh my gosh, this is gross, and I can't believe, I need to do this, and, nobody appreciates it. Whatever was going through my head, it wasn't really good stuff. And as I'm down on my knees, my daughter Sarah comes running into the bathroom. She was probably 12 at the time. She had a huge bouquet of roses. She said, Mom, a guy from the florist just delivered these for you. What's that? What's it? Rose? St. Therese? Yeah. So my husband walked in right after, and I'm like, Peter, wow, thanks. He's like, I did not send those roses. I'm like, yes, you did. He's like, no. So we went back and forth. He said, don't you think I would admit it? Take the credit if I did? I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. So I opened it up, and there was a note in the inside. It wasn't signed, and this is what the note said. God sees when no one else does. Now, I want to tell you, I have never to this day found out who sent me those roses, but the timing was just spot on. Because I felt like through that, God was saying to me, I do see, and I appreciate, all the small acts you do. And what it did was it spurred me to really not just know that God appreciated him, but really to learn how to do those small acts with great love. Not just to do them and get them done, but really that there's value in doing them with great love, and that's what gives them value. So I think for all of us, it means growing in humility and learning how to love through sacrificial, selfless giving. Let's face it, as moms, as wives, as friends, as grandmothers, we will give sacrificially because it's in our DNA, right? But how will we give? Will we give freely and lovingly and willingly? Or will we give with a kind of resentment? There's a big difference, and we know when the difference happens. And so I ask always the Lord to purify my motives, to help me just do things out of love, not to look for recognition or reward or thank you. And I want to tell you that if we really are walking in humility, it doesn't mean minimizing our value as women or accepting low self-esteem. I love this quote by C.S. Lewis, his definition of humility. He says, true humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. It's not thinking of yourself less. Less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. So as we walk through the kind of ordinariness of our lives, we are challenged not to despise the smallness of our daily lives, but to really see them as an opportunity to imitate the Lord's love for us. I think I've told some of you that I do ministry with young women, and I've been for 31 years running a camp called Pine Hills Girls Camp for junior high age girls. And it's really a place where they can come and encounter the Lord, meet Him, and really in a positive peer pressure, be really pushed to really love the Lord and engage in a personal relationship with the Lord. And about 3 years ago, we were ending one of our camps. Our main area that we meet for our prayer and our talks and our skits and everything is in this huge tent. So there were about maybe almost 300 of us in this tent. Yes, it's getting toasty in here now. Let me adjust it. And the theme of camp that summer was, that week that we were together, was love. And we talked a lot about what it meant to love. And as I looked around at these young women who just were so full of joy and love for one another and just singing really their hearts out to the Lord, I had this thought, and I believe it was an inspiration from the Lord. The Lord was showing me that if each young woman here who carries Jesus' love out of this tent and goes out into the world and really lives that love and touches one person, we could start a revolution. It wasn't like, wow, this would be a cool idea. Like, I really believe that that can make a difference, that if each one of us goes out and brings Christ's love. So we began to share this idea and this thought with some of the young women and the high school girls that we were working with, and they got so excited about it. And we'd really use Mother Teresa as our model about what it means to love. And I remember one girl came to a meeting. We were meeting regularly once a week, and she said, a high school girl, she said, I did it. She said, she told the whole group, I love this week. And we said, well, what happened? She said, well, I was in the Target parking lot, and I was walking towards Target, and there was a woman standing in the parking lot, and I smiled at her. I actually looked her in the eyes, and I smiled at her. And she smiled back. And I kept walking, and she ran after me, and she tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, excuse me, this is going to sound weird, but I noticed that you smiled at me. She said, I've been having a really rough day. Would you mind taking a moment and praying for me? And so these two young women, a young and an older woman, stood in the Target parking lot and prayed together. And this young woman came back so excited, because what she experienced that day was just smiling at somebody has the ability to communicate love. So in very simple ways, we can be God's love in the world today. We can do small things with great love. Mother Teresa said, let no one ever come to you without leaving better and happier. Be the living expression of God's kindness. Kindness in your face, kindness in your eyes, kindness in your smile. I think I heard it said that she didn't let women join her order who didn't know how to smile. Okay. So the third way we learn how to love is by finding Christ in others. People often ask Mother Teresa why she loved the poor so much, how she could honor dignity in such difficult situations. In response, she liked to, when she was talking to somebody, grab somebody's hand and hold up their hand and slowly wiggle one finger at a time, and she would explain, this is the gospel right here. You did it to me. That's from Matthew 25. Whatever you did to the least of these, you did to me. Lord, when did we see you hungry? When did we see you naked? When did we see you in prison? For Mother Teresa, the whole gospel is right here. And she said, and we always have our hand with us. And we always can remember, you did it to me. We learn to love everyone by finding the image and likeness in every single person. It's not preferential. It's not exclusive. It's not conditional. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you will receive payment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. Who are the poor you need to love? Family? That annoying person at work? The less fortunate? And sometimes when you wake up in the morning, maybe you're that poor person you need to love today. So we can actually pray and we can ask God to help us see in others what we see in them. And a very challenging relationship with my youngest daughter when she was a teenager. Amazing young woman, high drama all the time. Her emotions went from 0 to 100 in less than a second. I mean, I thought, wow, when this girl matures, she's going to be like just a powerhouse. And I'm happy to report she's well on her way to doing that. But we had a lot of clashes. And she knew how to push my buttons, especially when her dad was out of town. And I would pray regularly, Lord, show me what you see in her. Help me to love what you love in her. Help me to like her right now. And it really helped me a lot. There's a story of Mother Teresa caring for a Hindu man who's dying. And as she leaned over him one day, he said to her, "Is your Jesus anything like you?" As we love Jesus in each person, his image and his love is reflected back to those people. Each one of us right now, wherever you are in your life, is enrolled in the school of love. In your marriages, in parenthood, in work, in friendship, in illness, in joys, in sorrows, everything that encompasses the thing we call life is a school of love. It's an opportunity to learn. Nowadays, you know, you go to college and people say, what's your major? And kids expect to figure out what their major is before they even get there. And some kids say to me, how am I supposed to know? I've never been to college before. The whole point of school is to be there to learn something you don't know how to do. And that's what life is all about, is learning how to love. Okay. In here. Okay, next one. This is a hard one. We learn to love by learning how to forgive. And this is where we're really called to mirror God's mercy and unconditional forgiveness. When my mom was diagnosed with cancer a number of years ago, and seemed pretty serious, it was very difficult for me in a lot of ways. But one of the hardest things about it was I just felt like I did not know how to love her. We had a very difficult relationship, which got harder in my conversion. And my mom was pretty distant with me, and it wasn't really even about my conversion. It was about things in her own life and pain in her own life. But there was never any physical affection or any kind of affirmation. I think I knew my mother loved me through other things she did, acts of service. But so I needed to go home, and I needed to be with her when I found this out. And I drove home from Ann Arbor to Chicago. It was about 4.5 hours, and I just prayed the whole way. I think I put on praise and worship music, and I just filled my heart and my mind, and I just said, Lord, help me to see what you see and to love her. And I just prayed. I remember asking Mother Teresa to really give me a heart of love. I remember I was very nervous. I walked into the house, and she was standing at her kitchen sink with her back to me. And I walked up to her, and it was very stealth, so I don't think she heard me. But I think the water was running or something. And I put my hand on her shoulder, and she jumped a little bit, and she turned around. And I kid you not, as she turned around and I looked in her eyes, I saw the face of Christ. I saw his wounds in her. I saw not somebody who had hurt and wounded me, but somebody who had been wounded. And in that moment, this tremendous moment of grace, I was able to just let it go and to forgive her. And just to love her for right where she was at and who she was as a daughter and a child of God. And that moment set the tone for the rest of the time I had with my mother, and that I was really able to love her with Christ's love and to really sincerely forgive her and to let go of that pain in our relationship, which enabled me to really love her. Let it go, whatever it is, so you're free to love. Free to love yourself, free to love the Lord, and free to love others. Almost done here. We live in very difficult, scary times, not only out there, but in our own homes. And I've talked to so many of you this weekend, and it's just so heartbreaking what you're going through and requires so much courage and strength, and there's so much brokenness within our own families and our own lives. And we can often feel helpless and discouraged. When Pope John Paul, now St. Pope John Paul, visited Madrid in 2003, he addressed 1 million young people. And this is what he told them. Respond to the blind violence and inhuman hatred with the fascinating power of love. Within you lie the answers to the civilization you are living in. That's it. He nailed it. Love. Respond to everything around you that seems to be tearing this world apart, and we are in danger of being torn apart with love. It doesn't matter what side of the political aisle they stand on. It doesn't matter where they are on issues. It doesn't matter in a certain way where their lifestyles are. How many of you remember way back, I don't even know when it was, the 80s, those bracelets, WWJD. All right, raise your hand if you had one. All right, anyone get the t-shirt? All right, maybe not. Okay. Gosh, brilliant, right? What would Jesus do? Love. 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 That's what we're called to do, in spite of everything. We must build a civilization of love, or there will be no civilization at all. Within each of you lies the presence and the power of love through Jesus Christ, and you have the amazing privilege and terrifying responsibility of carrying and bearing that with you every day when you go to the grocery store, when you pick up your dry cleaning, when you hang out with your kindergartners. Whatever you're doing, you are bearing Christ. You represent him. You are called to be Christ to the world. It's a tremendous responsibility, and it's a tremendous privilege, and we can only do it with love. But our love can make a real difference in the world. Recently, when Mother Teresa was at a conference, she was asked, "What can you do to promote world peace?" And this is what she said. "Really? Go home and love your family. Go home and love your family." Recently, I had, just a few weeks ago, had the privilege of having lunch with our bishop in the Diocese of Lansing. I wasn't the only one there. There were about a dozen of us there. And he made us go around and kind of say the things that we were doing in our ministries. And I said, okay, here's my chance to give the bishop some input. I said, "Bishop, programs are great, but the big picture of changing the whole world can feel overwhelming to most people. Do you agree?" He was like, you know, he's like dialing into me. I said, "What we do with our young women, our young people, is we tell them, wake up in the morning and say to yourself, what is the one thing I can do today to reflect God's love? Not the 100 things, not the big thing, just the one thing today. And then we start all over again tomorrow." Because we have to break it down. We have to keep it simple. We have to know that the way we're living our lives in just the small ways, the one way, can make a huge difference. So I expect big changes in the diocese after my conversation with the bishop. Mother Teresa said, "Just begin one at a time. One, one, one. If I hadn't gone on the street," she said, "and picked up that one child in the gutter, I would never have picked up 100 or 1,000. Just start with one. One at a time. Perhaps I can't bring the gospel to the whole world, but I must begin by choosing to love one person at a time and teaching others to do the same through daily faithfulness and obedience. And when we do that, that one, one, one turns into many." Amen. Thank you. All right. I think that's the end of my slides. Yep. Okay. So I was going to tell you a little bit about Renewal Ministries, so you can check it out. And I think we'll have a sign-up sheet if you would like to get our newsletter. And it's also online at renewalministries.net, and there's products and missions. And you can come to Ann Arbor and visit us. Jan and some of the other ladies have come up for our Renewal Ministries gathering, which is just a great weekend of inspiration and prayer and teaching and meeting people from all over. If you've been to the gathering, raise your hand. Wow, okay, more than a few, okay. So it sounds like there's a caravan that's going up there, so you can hear. It's in April, first weekend in April? Okay, 7th to the 9th. Stay in a really nice hotel. It's nice. And very, very inspirational. So renewalministries.net, and we'll have a sign-up sheet if you'd like to get our newsletter. It's a free newsletter, and it lets you know what we're doing all over the world and what's going on. You can also check out the ministry that I have for young women, BeLoveRevolution.com. And we also do run, I know you run a summer camp, not to be in competition. I think yours is for younger. Okay, so they need somewhere to go after they're done. But Pine Hills Girls Camp, if you got girls that age, or there is one for boys, it's not as good as a girls one, but I can tell you more about that if you got kids that age as well. As a parent, I know how important it is to find places where our kids can encounter Christ, to get them there, whether it's through camps or retreats or mission trips, and to give them opportunities to be where Christ is present where he's alive and where young people, other young people are really engaged. Obviously, Steubenville and other places like that are amazing, too. So there are a lot of places and a lot of resources. The Lord is definitely working in young people and really calling them to deeper conversion. So I encourage you to check those things out. Okay, I think we have some closing announcements here before we head to the next thing.